I was a little surprised when Don said, oh, we want to do that superstition thing. And what went through my mind was, what little I know about your organization, going back to Transylvania in the 1600s, it seemed like you spent most of your time and energy trying to get away from this sort of thing. As a troubadour, I've always believed that the spirit of our ancestors travels to us through their songs and their folklore. So I'm just going to mostly let the songs speak for them. The Psalm of David, when he fled from Absalom, his son. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. I laid me down and slept, I waking rose. For me, Jehovah firmly up did bear. Full 1,010 of folk I will not fear, which me besetting round about and Ainsworth Psalter that the pilgrims brought over with them. And then the first book ever published on this continent, the Bay Psalm Book, 1640. Didn't really include the music. Just would say, to be sung to the gravest and easiest of French and Dutch songs. This is Psalm 3. I laid me down and slept. I lay me down and slept. I waking rose. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people, for they have set themselves against me round about. 1,010 of folk I will not fear. Which me besetting round about encloses. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly, which me besetting round about enclose. Not necessarily a song that you might whistle as you walk through the woods. But we do have a different color or perspective of our ancestors, mostly through, of course, our high school and grade school textbooks. But we've got to remember that they were people, human beings, and they had all different kinds that were among them. So in a celebration, drinking song. For some reason, all down through antiquity and Western culture, the three professions that are always getting messed up, whether it be with devils or angels, were millers, weavers, and tailors. And if any here present have their last name as miller, weaver, or tailor, take warning. In the good old colony days, when we lived under the king, was a miller and a weaver and a little tailor, three jolly rogues of Lynn, three jolly rogues of Lynn, three jolly rogues of Lynn. Lived a miller and a weaver and a little tailor, three jolly rogues of Lynn. Now the miller, he stole the corn, and the weaver, he stole the yarn, and the little tailor stole the broadcloth for to keep those three chaps warm, for to keep those three chaps warm, for to keep those three chaps warm. And the little tailor stole the broadcloth for to keep those three chaps warm. Now the miller got drowned in his pond, and the weaver got hanged in his yard, and the devil clapped the claw on the little tailor with the broadcloth under his arm, with the broadcloth under his arm, with the broadcloth under his arm. And the devil clapped the claw on the little tailor with the broadcloth under his arm. Now the miller, he rots in the sea, and the weaver, he rots in the soil, but the little tailor, he trips through hell with the broadcloth under his arm, with the broadcloth under his arm, with the broadcloth under his arm. And the little tailor, he trips through hell with the broadcloth under his arm. In the good old colony days, when we lived under the king. I have mixed emotions about including that song. The substance of it goes back into the colonial days, but the whole thing is sort of in the past tense, which implies that the song actually came out after we were a republic, at least that portion of it. So let's go back to something that most definitely was around when we were just beginning to get ourselves established on the eastern shore of this continent. Contrary to popular belief, when the pilgrims first came over, they did not find necessarily infinite forest along the shore. No, what they found were fertile, cultivated fields of the folk that were here already. But this is a great song. It's one of the oldest in the English language, right up there with the song that Johnny Mathis made so much money singing many years ago, a variation of, I gave my love a cherry that has no stone. That's a riddle song. And back in the very early days, if you suspected someone wasn't being true blue, you just didn't come out and ask them, hey, what's going on? What you did is you asked them a riddle. And it would have been impossible to answer the riddle unless God sent down an angel to whisper the answer in your ear, because you are so pure of heart and soul. As when I was teaching at times, they actually let me into the schools once in a while, the fifth graders would always think, well, there must have been an awful lot of guilty people back then. So in this case, it's the Devil's Nine Questions. The song is over 1,000 years old. The story is basically the devil has come up, he sees this pretty girl, and he wants to take her off with him to hell. And she's going, nay, 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 nay. And he's going, well, wait a minute. And she says, I am betrothed to the weaver. And so in order to test her fidelity to the weaver, he asked her these questions. And she has to answer them. If she messes up just once, she's off with him. So, Devil's Nine Questions. I'm going to use the dulcimer. This is also early theater. The troubadour would go from town to town, and eventually some other people would think, he's got a pretty nice life, and they would join him, and then they would act out the parts as he sang the song. You could always tell who the bad person was because they wore a hat with horns and a little coat with a tail on it. And you could always tell who the good person was because they always stood there holding up three fingers for the Holy Trinity. You must answer me questions 9. Sing 99 and 90 to see if your gods are one of mine. Are you the weaver's bunny? What is higher than a tree? Sing 99 and 90. And what is deeper than the sea? Are you the weaver's bunny? Heaven is higher than a tree. Sing 99 and 90. And hell is deeper than the sea. And I am the weaver's bunny. And what is whiter than the milk? Sing 99 and 90. And what is softer than the silk? Are you the weaver's bunny? Snow is whiter than the milk. Sing 99 and 90. And down is softer than the silk. And I am the weaver's bunny. What is louder than a horn? Sing 99 and 90. And what is sharper than a thorn? Are you the weaver's bunny? That's a tough one there. Thunder is louder than a horn. Sing 99 and 90. And death is sharper than a thorn. And I am the weaver's bunny. And what is more innocent than a lamb? Sing 99 and 90. And what is meaner than womankind? Are you the weaver's bunny? A babe's more innocent than a lamb. Sing 99 and 90. And is she devil's meaner than womankind? And I am the weaver's bunny. You have answered me these questions 9. Sing 99 and 90. You're one of God's and none of mine. And you are the weaver's bunny. The ancient game song, 99 and 90. Of course, along came Protestantism and Calvin, and they would have thrown that song right out the window because you're born in original sin.
So,
superstition. Actually, sometimes it was fun. A couple game songs based on superstition. Here's one. Three farmers went hunting. It's not three hunters went a farming. It's the other way around. Three farmers went a hunting, and the first thing they did see was a barn in the meadow, and that they left behind. Looky there now, looky there now, run away. Some said it was a barn, and the others, they said nay. They said it was a church with the steeple blown away. Looky there now, run away. Three farmers went a-hunting, and the next thing they did find was a witch in the cottage, and that they left behind. Looky there now, run away. Some said it was a girl, but the others, they said nay. They said it was an angel with her wings cut away. Looky there now, run away. Well, they hunted and they hollowed, and the last thing they did find was an owl in a big old tree, and that they left behind. Looky there now, run away. Some said it was an owl, but the others, they said nay. They said it was the evil one, and they all ran away. Looky there now, run away. Or the lovely children's song. This is what the pilgrim kids sang to each other. There was an old woman all skin and bone. Ooh. She went to the churchyard all alone. Ooh. Ooh. She looked it up and she looked it down. Ooh, ooh. She saw a corpse lie on the ground. Ooh, ooh. Oh, Father, Father, then she cried. Shall I look so when I have died? The sexton to her made reply. Ooh, ooh. Yes, my darling, by and by. Ooh, boom.
Sometimes it still works, even if you know it's coming. Ah, the old songs. All right, now I'm going to really go out on a limb. I had reservations, but I told that this was basically an open podium. So I am going to sing you a great Puritan, somewhat bawdy drinking song. Oh, yeah, there were. I should remember his name, the fellow that left the Puritan congregation and set up a counter colony just a little bit north, and they were having a wonderful time. The Indians would always go there to party. Everybody got along famously, but then they built a maypole. That was too much. So Miles Standish was ordered to take his little outfit up there, take that maypole, chop it down, and chop it into pieces. So, this little ditty concerns a fellow called Robin Goodfellow. Robin Goodfellow was the right hand, well, maybe depending on how you're standing, left hand's man of Satan. He was kind of fun to have around, but he was unpredictable and consequently maybe a little bit dangerous. We all have friends like that. We have to think twice if we're going to go out to a restaurant with them. But they're so much fun. Robin Goodfellow. From Hagbed in Ireland's time have I thus nightly reveled to and fro, for my pranks men call me by the name of Robin Goodfellow. Hagbed Marlin's time have I this nightly reveled to and fro, for my pranks men call me by the name of Robin Goodfellow. And ghosts and spirits who haunt the night, and hags and goblins do me know, El Beldane's old, my feet's and gold, and I go laughing, whoa, whoa, whoa. He was known for his laugh. Oh, 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 good fellow. Oh, 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 oh. When house and hearth thus sluggish lie, I pinch the maidens black and blue. Bedclothes from the bed pull I show them naked all to view. Twixt sleep and wake, I do them take, and on the key cold floor them throw. Out they cry, then forth I fly, and I loudly laugh out, whoa, whoa, whoa. Takes me to one of my favorite songs, one of the songs that got me interested in folk music. It also got Burl Ives a night in jail in Mana, Utah, when he tried to sing it to that community in a concert. Came right up on stage and took him away. It's actually also the first song ever censored on network television. Again, Burl Ives. 1949, Ed Sullivan's show. Oh, they were just outraged. After a couple days of negotiation, they finally let him sing it, provided he changed one word. The first word of the last verse from "Now I am a bachelor" to "Again I am a bachelor." So that there was no suggestion of colonial hanky-panky. So popular during the early days in New England. And when you think of the words, it's not hard to figure out why. The song and its origins goes back to the 14th century. When I was a bachelor, I lived all alone. I worked at the weaver's trade, and the only thing that I did that was wrong was to woo a fair young maid. I wooed her in summertime, and part of the winter too. And the only thing that I did that was wrong was to keep her from the foggy dew. One night she knelt close by my side while I was fast asleep. So she threw her arms around my neck and then began to weep. She wept, she cried, she tore her hair. Ah me, what could I do? So all night long I held her in my arms just to keep her from the foggy dew. Now I am a bachelor, I live with my son. We work at the weaver's trade, and every single time that I look into his eyes, he reminds me of the fair young maid. He reminds me of summertime and part of the winter too, and the many times that I held her in my arms just to keep her from the foggy. And I find little things of history fascinating. But while those television censors were stewing and fussing about whether to, well, about the song in general, the likes of Sinclair Lewis and Richard Dyer Bennett and Carl Sandburg were exchanging correspondence with each other, sharing their interpretations of the metaphysical meaning of the foggy dew. Superstition. There were a lot of witches back then, I suppose. Lots of them. I'm told there still are. Witches. Old Mammy Red from Marblehead hanged from a tree till she was dead. Little children's ditty from Marblehead, Massachusetts. One of the things that she was accused of was the blue mold. They were having very damp summers, and blue mold was getting into their grain, and she was accused of putting that blue mold into their grain. Some historians think that that blue mold had a lot to do with the witch trials, because they think it might have been slightly hallucinogenic. Yes, witches. Let me find, I made a note as to what key to do this in. There we go. From a broadside from the witch trials. These were newscasts in the 1690s. Susanna Martin was a witch who dwelt in Amesbury, with brilliant eye and salty tongue. She worked her sorcery, and when in court the afflicted ones proclaimed her evil ways, she laughed out loud and boldly then met Cotton Mather's case. Who hath bewitched these maids, he asked, and strong came her reply. If they be dealing in black arts, then you know as well as I. And then the afflicted ones made moan as she approached them near. They saw a shape upon a beam, so none could doubt was her. Their voices loud did ring. They saw a bird above her head, an evil yellow thing. Susanna Martin, so accused, spake with flaming eye, I scorn these things, for they are not but filthy gossip's lies. Spectral evidence was weighed, and stern the parson spoke, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. 'Tis written in the book." And so Susanna Martin died beneath the summer sky. Still in scorn she faced the rope, her comely head held. Susanna Martin. There are so many broadsides from those troubled times. Just as a FYI, something like that. In this continent, we didn't burn witches at the stake. No, we hang them. Hang them. If you're a wizard, like Giles Corey, more rocks, more rocks, more rocks, he cried. Then we crushed them to death with rocks. It was generally hanging. My most favorite witch of all was one old Meg. And oh Lordy, she was a witch. She had all the necessary qualifications for being a witch. She was old, she was wrinkled, she was just a little bit on the ugly side, old Meg. She was so old, in fact, that most folks, they couldn't even remember what family she belonged to. And old Meg, she worked as a woman weaver down Narragansett Bay Colony. That meant that she would hire her services out to more prosperous folk, folk who could afford a loom. And old Meg, she worked with several other women folk up in the weaving loft of their local ministers. And those other women folk up there in that loft with her, they knew she was a witch. Because you see, she would just sit for hour upon hour staring off into that loom, never moving a muscle. They would be tempted to have words with her about this laziness and all. But they never did. Because her being a witch and all, you know, you can't be too careful about witches. So they would watch and they would wait. And every so often, that shuttle would start to fly back and forth across the loom. Bang, 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 bang. And strangely enough, at the end of every week, she had more cloth woven and of a finer quality than any other woman in all of Narragansett Bay Colony. Well, they knew it couldn't be the old woman all by herself. I mean, really. Lucy, the minister's daughter, she knew for a fact about her being a witch. Because she said that she could hear old Meg's loom going all by itself late at night up there in the weaving loft. And Joe Spink, he knew for a fact about her being a witch. You see, he had bought some gumption from her. She brewed it on the side for a little extra spending money. Gumption. You don't hear that term much anymore. When I was growing up, my dear old Aunt Edith used the word a lot. It was something either I had too much of or not enough of. Gumption. Actually, it's very hard cider. Gumption. And Joe Spink, claiming the last batch weren't strong enough, was riding into town to have it out with the old woman when a bee came along, stung his horse on the end of the nose, the horse upended, jumped Joe Spink on the ground, and he broke his leg. Now that exact same moment that bee came along and stung his horse on the end of the nose, Lucy, she saw a bee fly out of old Meg's mouth up there in the weaving loft. Now, it's been about 30 years or so since they'd hanged the last witch in those parts. The folks were starting to make some preparations when some sparks jumped out of the hearth fire, settled into some iron sheets and blankets, caught a hole, pretty soon all smoke. Everybody raced out through that smoke. In their haste, they forget to tell old Meg she's up there in the weaving loft, the bang, bang, bang of the shuttle, and her being just a little bit hard of hearing. They started to go back in to save that lady that they had left behind in the flames
when suddenly she appeared at the front door, surrounded in smoke. "Where's the cat?" she asked. Nobody knew. To this, I hadn't even thought about it. Before they could stop her, she had turned back into the flames. 2 long minutes passed, and old Meg appeared at that front door again, with Tabby in her arms. Now you see, witches, they got a thing with cats. And that house didn't burn down anyway. Folks figured old Meg knew the house wasn't going to burn down. You see, witches, they try and do things like that. They try and impress folk. You got to watch out for witches. Nobody ever saw her drink any water. Of course, everybody knows water's fatal to witches. Or eat any food, for that matter. Now, the minister said she had no bread tucked up under her sleeve, and she never went to Sunday meeting. Well, that was a little bit too much for folk. They would have words with her about that. But whenever they did, she would always smile up at them, kind of weird-like, and say, "I believe." Sure, she believes. Well, late one night, the minister and his wife were coming back into town after doing their charity rounds when they came upon old Meg going out the other direction, the old woman stumbling along, holding her side and gasping for breath. Wife looks up to her husband and says, "Old Meg, that witch, I think she's finally getting her just desserts." "Yes, sirree." Old Meg did not show up for work that following morning. The minister used her unexpected absence to good advantage. He preached a fiery, impromptu sermon to those women folk up there in the weaving loft on what happens to you when you lead an unsanctified life. Well, they listened, particularly a young girl over the back of the room, because she'd been kind of friendly with old Meg. So after work was done, she threw her shawl around her shoulders, raced out through the outskirts of town, across the frozen fields, for it was now the middle of February. They came to old Meg's hut, about a mile and a half outside of town. It was all dark, no sign of life. She knocked, waited, nothing. Knocked again. Finally, cautiously, she lifted the drawstring and she opened the door. And there inside that cold black room lay Meg, all stiff and dead, on her old straw bed. Well, what are you going to do with her? You can't bury her in a churchyard. She's a witch. Well, just dig a hole beside her hut and put it in, cover it up, forget about it. Oh, wait, you can't walk on a witch's grave. Okay, well, just roll a big old rock over it, and we're done. Winter passed into spring. Any good witch-hating folk, they come by that hut. They heave a rock at it. Pretty soon all the walls and windows are burst in great gaping holes. Spring passed into summer. It was late summer when some young boys decided they were going to pay this haunted hut a visit. They picked a high August afternoon when there weren't too many clouds in the sky, because when you're doing something kind of dangerous, no sense taking chances. They worked their way up to that old front door, mustered up their courage, kicked it open, and they just stood and stared. Because that old straw deathbed had taken root. And nurtured by the spring rains and the summer sun streaming in through those shattered windows, It had grown into a profusion of bright meadow flowers. I am the mountain. I am the sky. I am the swallow. I fly and fly. I am the meadow. I nurse the land. I am the river. I am, I am. We're bound together. This world and me. I am a part of the things I see. I am of nature. It is of me. I'm of my maker. I am, I am. I'm told you go down Narragansett. You can still find the spot where that old hut once stood. And where that big old rock still lies. Except now I'm told that it has a single word carved into it. My friends, is a true witch's tale. Thank you.